Welcome to the Human and Technology Podcast. This podcast is for anyone who develops, distributes, or uses technology. For all those who always have the feeling that technology overwhelms or dominates them. For everyone who wants to know how to deal with technology in everyday life. For anyone who wants to understand what technology does to us and how we can get our lives back. This podcast is for those who want to make technology sexy. All the product developers, designers, UX, UI professionals, product managers, CTOs, and CEOs. And it is for you. My name is Dr. Peter Ryska. My friends call me Dr. Peter. I am your host, and I am happy that you are here. Hello, 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 and welcome back to the Human Technology Podcast. First of all, those of you listening to this podcast on a regular basis may hear that my voice is a little rough, sore, not the way it is usually. I caught me a good cold a couple of days ago and I'm still working on it. So please excuse me if I'm coughing, if it's a little rough here, if I'm sniffing. I'm not doing anything illegal here. It is just that I'm still fighting with the very final days of the cold. But I want to keep the bi-weekly rhythm for the Human Technology Podcast. And this is why I'm recording this episode, although I am not, as far as my voice is concerned, in a perfect condition. Today, I will talk about the books of a person that I find super interesting, that for me is one of the most interesting personalities in science, in philosophy, in the relationship between humans and technology. It's about Yuval Noah Harari. Why do I talk about him? It's about the H in HMI. HMI, human-machine interface. And so we have a human part in the relationship between humans and technology, and understanding the human for me is core in being able to design perfect technology. I have the saying in my, or one of my claims is, we need to know everything about humans to design technology, not vice versa. I experience it very often in my professional life, still until today, that somebody has a technology, somebody has a solution, and we need to have this as a product, we need to put this out, and the human side is not in focus. And then we say, okay, we're going to put out the technology the way it is, and then we design the human around the technology. And this is a, it's exactly the wrong way around. Those of you knowing me a little better will realize that this is exactly the opposite of what I believe, what I preach, what I talk about. And so I believe human is core. We need to put the human into the focus, and then out of the needs, the dreams, the abilities of a human, we can design useful, valuable technology. In my lectures that I'm giving, this part on the H eats up a lot of space, so I'm talking a lot about this. Not only about, let's say, the classical cognition psychology of cognition, of information processing, human information processing, but about the human as a phenomenon. Not only a biological phenomenon, but a social being, as a being at all, and also as a spiritual being. So all this is part of my thinking when I believe we want to design perfect technology, useful technology, valuable technology, then we need to know what the human is as a being. And Harari, from my point of view, as I see it, as already said, one of the biggest, brightest thinkers of our times. He talks a lot about this. He thinks a lot about exactly these aspects. And I do not agree in any aspect, in every aspect with him. Yeah? Their aspect, their thoughts he's having, I said, no, not my thought. But at the very end of the day, his thoughts and the results he gets out of this are absolutely clear, are absolutely consequent, are bright, are useful. And this is why I'm making this episode. And I will talk about three of his books. They came out between about 2015 and 2021, I think. The first one is called Sapiens, A Brief History of Humankind. The second one is called Homo Deus, A Brief History of Tomorrow. And the third book I want to talk about is 21 Lessons for the 21st Century. The latest book of Harari is not part of this podcast. It's called Nexus. It is about artificial intelligence. It is about information networks. I'm reading it at the moment. I have not yet finished it. No, not talk a book I have not read. And this is why it's not part of this podcast. And I think it's so heavy. It is so detailed. It is, under some aspects, so frightening that I want to make a separate episode about this sometime in the future. Then it will be about artificial intelligence and how Harari sees this and where dangers are from his point of view. And so I will do this in some time in the future. All right, we have these three books that I want to focus on, and let's talk about Harari first. He is a historian. He's a philosopher. He was born in 1976 in Kiryat Atta in Israel, and he got his PhD degree from the University of Oxford in 2002. At the moment, he's professor at the Historical Institute of the Hebrew University in Jerusalem. In his research, he focuses on what is called macrohistoric aspects, and the relationship, for example, between history and biology, the differences between the Homo sapiens, the human we are, and other animals on this planet, and about the ethical challenges that science and technologies bring in the 21st century. Together with his husband, Itzhak Yahav, he founded a social business called Sapienship in 2019. And he is, this company, Sapienship, is running projects in education, storytelling, and focuses on the public discussion on important questions of global challenges of our times, whatever this in detail means, but together with his husband, Harari is running this company. His work offers deep insights into the past, the present, and the future of humankind. And from my point of view, they raise the right questions and they raise the right discussions about the role of the human in a rapidly changing world. And this is one of the things I find most fascinating about Harari, that he is a historian, a guy that looks backward in time and analyzes what happens in the past. He then identifies the constant aspects of what happened in the past and extrapolates this into the future. So he creates a vision of the future based on constant phenomenons, on durable phenomenons that happened in the past. And then he says, okay, humans are the way humans are, and this has happened in the past. And based on that, we see these challenges in the future. This is his main thinking. This is what he is the way he is working, the way he is thinking and creating his scientific output. All right, let's start with the first book, Sapiens, A Short History of Humankind. It gives an extensive overview on the development of Homo sapiens, of the humans we are, from the very early beginnings to the modern times. And he identifies four significant revolutions. The first one is the cognitive revolution. About 70,000 years ago, within a very short time frame, as far as evolution is concerned, in this very short time frame, Homo sapiens developed unique cognitive abilities. Specifically, the ability to use complex language and to communicate on complex levels. Animals can communicate with each other. If there is a group of monkeys somewhere sitting around and the tiger comes, once the monkey sees that and then he communicates to the other monkeys, hey, the tiger is coming, and they all go up on the trees. Or bees communicate with other bees when they change the frequency of their wings. So those are ways of probably the singing of the whales is also a communication between whales. But only humans are able to communicate on a highly complex level. And this then, and this is the second point here, leads to the use of abstract concepts like myths, like religions, like social structures, big communities, holding them together with these myths, religions, and social structures, allowing flexible cooperations with larger groups. And these imaginary realities, as he calls it, allows it, the human Homo sapiens, to dominate the other species and the entire planet. The second point in Sapiens is the agricultural revolution. About 12,000 years ago, humans started to plant plants and to steer the herds of animals. Before that, it was sheer hunting and collecting. Humans took what was out there. And suddenly they said, okay, we have more stability in the supply with calories, and we can get more calories if we have a plan. If we plan how to plant plants. If we plan how to plant plants. Yeah, that's right. And if we domesticate animals, not just having some sheep, some goats running around, but we put them into herds and we take care of them, we feed them, and we take care that they get babies. And so we do not kill them all, but we keep some of them to replicate themselves and to stabilize our supply of calories. This replaced the nomadic lifestyle that was normal in the times before, with building villages, with the non-nomadic lifestyles. And this led to a growth in population and to technological progress, but also created social inequality. It created diseases, and it created harder working conditions. The people needed to work harder in a condition that were worse, and they had a higher chance to get some kind of disease. And so this is something like the biggest cheating in history, as Harari calls it, because the life of a single human did not get really better. Only the entire society, the large groups, the communication, and also the lives of those that controlled the myths, the religions, the money, all these concepts that came with this. And I have a friend, and he said, yeah, the time between 70,000 years ago and 12,000 years ago, that must have been the best times of humankind. We had the full ability, as we have it today, to communicate, to understand. We had a full intelligence. But we were hunting and collecting 2-3 hours per day. And the rest of the time, we were just hanging around in groups of 5, 15, maybe 25 beings and having a great time. So this must have been really, really, really cool times at that time. I don't know whether this is really true, but this is, from my point of view, a very interesting thought that you can have about this. The third evolution Harari defines in Sapiens is the unity of humankind. During history, different countries came up and fell down. Religions came up and faded out. Different trading systems came up and faded away. And all these countries, religions, trade connected different cultures. And in this case, money as a universal means of exchange, as a universal value, grew. And money is, of course, you can have a dollar bill or a euro bill on your desk, and this is a physical object, or a coin. Now you can have a piece of gold on your desk, and you can see this. But if you have a 100 or 500 euros bill and you want to buy something in a supermarket, and the lady behind the counter says, no, we don't accept them, then you have theoretically 500 euros. But you cannot buy anything with this because there is no trust. They don't believe in this one. Yeah, so money is a means of believing. We trust that this piece of paper that has the value of a couple of cents has the value of 500 euros. And it's pretty much the same with religions. Yeah, you have a common system of beliefs that bind people together. Same with political structures. Yeah? The political structure in democracy or a little bit democracy or any kind of political system is not something visible. Sometimes you have big buildings, but this big building is not a political system. It's a representation of the political system. And only because people believe in this, maybe not really freely, maybe they are pressed to believe in this political system, but they believe in this, and this creates the political system because people believe in this. And only humans can do this. And then we had, so this is the fourth revolution, Harari sees the scientific revolution about 500 years ago. The scientific revolution created an unbelievable growth in knowledge and then in technology. And the seeing that we don't know things and are realizing that we don't know things and the need coming out of this to research and to make technology alive, to get more knowledge, yeah, that creates enormous progress in science, industry, and medicine, healthcare. And this changed, and I think everybody will agree with me that technology heavily changed our lives in the past 300 years, even in the past 100 years, or maybe even in the past 50 years, with the internet and now AI, that this deeply changes societies and, for first of all, challenges the traditional religious and political systems. The focus point here in Sapiens is the ability of humans to believe a common fiction. And this allows living in larger, flexible communities. This can be religions, nations, money. All these are theoretical constructs, theoretical ideas. And they exist in the human brain only. They're not real. But they're having real consequences on the world. Yeah, they change the world we live in. And at the very end, Harari says that capitalism is the most successful religion we have found And he's discussing all the ethical questions connected to overcapitalism or free capitalism that you have. Second book, Homo Deus, A History of Tomorrow. And this title already shows what I have stated a couple of minutes ago, that what I like about Harari is that he is a historian. He looks into the past, but then he draws consequences for the future, that is. And Homo Deus is basically a follow-up of, or the second part of Sapiens. So these books belong together and should be read together. Again, four different theses he has. So we have new targets as humankind. That's the first one. We have solved under many aspects the basic problems like hunger, diseases, and war. And this might sound in days like these a little strange, but we are still living in the most peaceful time humankind has ever lived. It's still comparably peaceful, although we have the wars going on and nobody knows how it will be in the future, in the next years. But at the moment, it's still very peaceful. And hunger is a problem in parts of the world, but this is not because we don't have enough food. It's just distributed unequally, and usually that is part of a war strategy. This is not natural. Hunger is something humans want to have. And after solving these problems like hunger, diseases, and war, humans strive for longevity, everlasting life, everlasting luck and happiness, and godlike abilities. And this is what he calls he sees that the Homo sapiens is becoming Homo Deus, the godlike human. The second thesis, the second major thesis of Homo Deus is the dataism. We will see, this is what Harari says, and I believe this in most parts, we will have a future. We will have a future view on the world that's based on dataism. So dominating data, dominating algorithms for all parts of our lives. And from his point of view, this is endangering human values. Now, this could lead to the fact that human experiences and human decision-making will be replaced with non-conscious, non-human, but highly intelligent algorithms. And maybe either influenced or, what he believes, replaced. This is what we see with artificial intelligence at the moment. Nobody really knows where this will go to. How to control this? Do we need any control at all? Or will this be regulated by itself, out of itself? I don't believe this. I think we need some kind of regulation. And so we replace human experiences and human decision-making with machine decision-making. And all this is non-conscious and non-human. The third part, or the third thesis he's thinking about, is the future of work and society. With artificial intelligence and biotechnology, many of traditional working places will be obsolete, and we're seeing this already at the moment. Many jobs that seem to be pretty safe are not safe anymore. They're replaced by artificial intelligence. And Harari warns that we will have a useless class of humans replaced by machines, not playing any economical role, not having any economical impact, and this could lead to enormous social and political changes. This is one of the points where I do not fully agree with Harari. We had this kind of thinking in the past many times. When the robots came, when the steam engines came up, everybody says, yeah, only a few people will have work in the future, the rest will be useless. And we had robots in the early 1970s. We had computers 10 years later. And every time was just like, this will destroy many, many, many other workplaces. It has not happened. Yes, the working that the kind of work has changed and the workplaces have changed. And this is just like people being able to ride horse carriages were useless within a couple of years when the automobile came up 120, 130 years ago. Yeah, this happened right away in a short time frame. But there were other jobs. And so this discussion comes up whenever a new technology is out. And in the past, it has never turned out to be true. The fourth aspect of Homo Deus is ethical questions. Yeah, the ability to use technology to let humans live longer, to create longevity, and to let humans live better, create basic ethical questions. So the consequences are when that at the very end, with biotechnology and artificial intelligence, humans may be able to steer their own evolution. Now, the quick question is here, what impact will this have on our identity, on our societies, and ourselves, our beings as humans? And this is something I can fully follow. When we have eternal lives and we never die, then evolution and any kind of change of human development, of social development, will suddenly stop. Because the younger generation, the young people, they are the ones replacing the old ones, creating new ideas and living new lives. And if people live forever, this will not happen. And this will have serious impact on our social systems. Yeah, and on all the payments we make. How can we pay the pensions of people that live 250 years, but stop working at 55 or 65 or 70? Yeah. So retirement age will go up, but nobody believes in this. Nobody thinks about this, that the retirement age will heavily grow when we live forever. Yeah. How can we retire then? So all these are things that will have super heavy impacts. On the other hand, to be realistic, eternal life, or even raising our life to, let's say, 120 years lifetime, is not something that will happen within the next couple of years. All right, to summarize Homo Deus, we need to think about long-term impacts that we have in technology, in science. Harari is combining historical analysis and speculations about the future and the role of the mankind in a world that changes rapidly. Book number 3, 21 Lessons for the 21st Century. Here Harari analyzes the most important challenges and questions in our past and the near futures. And this book has 5 main chapters and all in all 21 subchapters. I don't know whether these 21 lections for the 21st century appeared in 2021. Maybe all this is some kind of numerical mystic that's coming up. Maybe it's just the way it is. The 5 main points are technological challenges. Harari discusses the impact of artificial intelligence and biotechnology on our work, on freedom, on equality. And he warns that merging information technology and biotechnology may get billions of people out of the working world, out of their jobs. I already said 2 minutes ago, I don't believe too much in this, but it is, of course, one option, but I don't take it very, very, I don't give it a very high chance. But it may impact freedom and equality. So if some people are able to pay for longevity, if some people are able to live longer, and there is a person I read about in the news, he spends €2 million, dollars, pounds every year on longevity measures. And his metabolism is, he's my age, he's about 60, is on the level of his son. Yeah? Big question, good thing or not. Second thing is the political challenge we see. Nationalism, religion, migration, all this is in focus, and we see this, and we have, I'm recording this one a couple of days before the election here in Germany. And migration is one of the big discussions we had in the past weeks in politics. How can we handle this one? And this is, and here I agree with Harari 100%, there is no national solutions. We have global problems and we need to find global solutions. And we are very bad in this at the moment. Not even within the European Union we find common solutions, because we have all these nationalism, we have all these thinking in countries, and if you add then religion, this gets even worse. And so we need a global cooperation, for example, to fight climate change, to fight migration, to control this, to steer this, and to find the right solutions for this. Desperate and hope. There's another point he discussed. He discusses in 21 Lessons for the 21st Century. There he talks about terrorism and war. And he says we need to put these threats into a certain relation. Terrorism is creating fear. And this is the target of terrorism. This is why terrorists go out and bomb things. Now, they want to create fear. But, and this is a very positive view, Simon, I'm sharing this one, terrorists don't have the power to change entire societies or to destroy entire societies. Number four, truth. And the chapter Truth, he analyzes the role of fake news and the crisis of post-factism. Very, very hot topic at the moment, with Trump being back in the White House. Fake news, alternative realities are suddenly back in the game. And with this one, we have a serious problem. Wrong information, fake news, are not a new phenomenon. They have been there all the time, and they have been used in political contexts all the time. The focus that we need to do is that we need to teach our children and to teach ourselves in critical thinking. We need to educate them. Not sheer knowledge. Education is not pressing knowledge into little brains, but it's creating self-thinking, critical thinking, so that every single person is able to distinguish between truth and lie. And number five is resilience. At the end of 21 Lessons for the 21st Century, Harari thinks about this education, about finding meaning in life, even down to meditation. And he says, as in number four also, that education in the 21st century is not so much teaching facts. You can Google everything. You can ask ChatGPT for everything. So the facts are there. But improving critical thinking and emotional intelligence, this is the core thing. What consequences is this having for the creation of HMIs, human-machine interfaces? We see challenges gain out of technological progress. And the idea that we melt information technology and biotechnology, and then we can change our societies, we can change our working worlds, we can change our social structures with that. And he says, we don't want to have this useless class of people that lost by, for example, the application of AI, their workplaces, their jobs. And he wants a global community. He wants to have a global communication, a global activity to solve all the ethical and social questions in connection with these technologies. The limits between humans and technologies will vanish. They will blur. They will go away at the very end. So with biotechnology, artificial intelligence, we may create human-machine interfaces that allow a direct communication between brain and computer. And Elon Musk has this one company that implants chips into human brains to allow human technology interaction. And at the very end, and the very final consequence, this may lead to the end of the traditional human biology and may create a new era where organic and non-organic components melt into each other, which basically at the very end means that our brains, our consciousness, our spirituality is downloaded into some kind of computer chip and stored there. To summarize this, Harari shows in these three books that I've analyzed here that the relationship between humans and technology started with using simple tools and at the very end leads to a complex dependency in advanced technological systems. And technology has the potential to improve human lives. And I very much believe in this. And the reason why I stand up every morning, because I want to make this world a better place with better technology, because human lives can be improved. We lead the best lives ever that we have in humankind. Yeah. We have houses, we have heating, we have air condition, we have cars to travel, we have the internet to communicate, we have smartphones to guide us. But we also have enormous risks in technology, particularly if we grab into human autonomy. If human autonomy is limited by technology, then we are facing serious problems. And this is why Harari wants to have a conscious and ethical discussion on technical developments and improvements to ensure that they benefit everyone. That's it for today. Thank you for spending time with me. I hope you were able to take something with you and do something for yourself that will be forever. For an ongoing exchange, you will find me on LinkedIn and on my websites, peter-rusker.com and beyond-hmi.de. Write me an email under podcast@beyond-hmi.de. Tune in next time, take care, and stay healthy.